I know I'm a big consumer of research papers, and it's probably to a fault. The goal here is to turn people into more informed consumers of this stuff. I mean, my bias is every time is, okay, that's bullshit. You know what I mean? There's almost no chance that's right, because if it's exciting enough to make the morning news, that means it's probably contradictory, which means it's unlikely to be true, at least not the first time around, and so and so on. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with you.
Right. So do you, let's start off right there. How do you come across new research findings? Do you even care? Or that kind of stuff.
So, you know, I use X or Twitter for that quite a lot because I follow, look, a lot of people in the training space, a lot of people in the orthopedic space and in other areas where I'm interested in. So I'll go into my list and I will check those every morning, as well as some journals. I subscribe via list to a few journals. So I do run through them as well. And then you're always a good source. You know, I'll get, you know, a good 10 articles a week from you.
Well, we have a shared, in the spirit of full disclosure, we have a shared account in where we're, you know, I used to bombard you with things and now I just put them there. And I'm regularly putting things there too, but for better or for worse, that's where how I share things. So whenever you're looking at what's the first thing you look at when you look at a new paper, you see a finding and you see like it's something on Twitter and you're like, a lot of this is an unconscious process, or at least it is for me, but let's imagine you see something. How do you decide if you care?
You know, I try to be scientific about it, and I'm not sure that my trying to be scientific is scientific, but I'll gather my first thoughts. We all have an intuition. I think that's one of the biggest problems of sharing these things on social is everyone is so well entrenched on their side, and they're sometimes not even willing to explore a result that's contrary to their heartfelt beliefs. And then I'll usually, even if I agree with the findings, I'll usually investigate the other side. So I have to be a little scientific about it. And I'll dive a little further. And to be honest and to be fair, I'm not the greatest statistician. So it's a little challenging for me in that respect. And I'll often see what others have to say about that, or you. Yeah. But I try to read both sides because I think one of our biggest failings these days is that we too quickly adopt an article's beliefs or statement based on our beliefs, and we too quickly dismiss one that is contrary to it.
Right. It's comforting to feel like, oh, I was right all along.
Well, like that study that came out that got all the press attention on the intermittent feeding or fasting. You know, everyone talked about how intermittent fasting is bad for you if you eat with less than an 8-hour window. And, you know, within seconds of me seeing it on Twitter, there were hundreds, you know, negative replies. Shitty journal, the American Heart Association, it was corrupt, this, that. And then I was wondering to myself the entire time, what if this article was positive? You know, all of a sudden the arguments that it's too small a sample, it's using, you know, NHANES data, it's doing this, all those failings would have fallen away and everyone would have loved it. Because unfortunately, the data on IF is just awful. You know, there are no great studies out there.
There are good studies on, I was more on the equivocal side where it's like, and this is a good example, was, you know, it's an area I at least pay attention to. I'm no nutrition geek, and the whole topic of nutrition, generally speaking, bores me. But I am interested in the general, some of the work going on with respect to fasting in the broadest sense with its effect in terms of cellular reprogramming and what happens after, you know, in mouse models and fruit flies, what happens after a couple of days of not, you know, of being on a restricted diet and what the effect of caloric restriction on cell aging and so on. There's a lot of really interesting stuff. In humans, it's more equivocal.
Right.
There's some evidence. There's some studies that have gone either way on things. There's some stuff in inflammation that's kind of interesting. So I'm prepared to go either way on it. And I'm not religious on it. And I can understand the criticisms of the paper. My issue with respect to this kind of paper is that it feels very trolling in the sense that...
Right.
It was obvious there was an attempt to get attention rather than an attempt to provoke an interesting conversation about a topic, right? And they got that. They got, I mean, you saw people saying, oh, this is garbage. I saw the opposite. I saw lots of people saying, I told you all that trendy stuff was no use.
It's funny.
I saw tons of this stuff. It was like, yeah. I knew all along. People should be eating all the, you know, should be eating on a regular basis, going for 16 hours without food and trying to compress. I knew that wasn't going to work. I got that all the time from people. So it's interesting.
Funny.
Both camps felt, you know, confirmed in their biases.
Right, exactly. I had a lot of people in the gym approach me. We had a lot of long conversations about this because they practice it, intermittent feeding. Again, I'm a firm believer that a few hours of not eating is not fasting. But, you know, they all do it. They want to do it to lose weight and it's working. And they were worried, you know, should I stop? I'm like, no. You know, if anything that has been proven, it helps you lose weight, right? Because you have a narrower eating window.
Yeah, so like for me, I make the analogy, it's like one of the best ways to avoid getting killed in a car is to drive less. Well, one of the best ways to avoid gaining weight is to spend less time eating, right? I mean, this seems fairly straightforward. The other claims with respect to, I don't know, type 2 diabetes remission and so on, these are all interesting, but not as well supported in studies that I've seen.
No, I agree that, you know, the cardiometabolic improvements are not, there really aren't any really great studies about that. And all these studies in animals and mice, wonderful. You know, that's great for the animals and mice. But a mouse not eating for 12 hours is not the same as a human not eating for 12 hours.
Yeah. So one of the most important things I tell people to do if you're assessing a study was, well, who was it conducted on? How did they select the population? Right. What biases are there in how that population was selected? Is it, you know, was there a control group? Was there actually an experimental intervention? I mean, there's 1,000 things you can do to try and assess the study. It's not enough. I saw a study the other day that was like, I think 8 people. I'm like, that's not a study. That's just a series of anecdotes. You know what I mean? And they all, there's this tendency, at least in terms of how these things are presented, to treat them all as if they're equivocal. And they're very clearly not, right?
Right.
These, and it's not that I'm some kind of sample size obsessive. It doesn't mean that, you know, 1 million people are better than twice as good as 500,000 is, you know, 2 million is better than 1 million and so on. No, there's diminishing returns here. Right? But it does matter to at least try to have a useful cross-section of the population of interest at a scale, some of the words you hate, but to give you some statistical power, right? You want some statistical power in terms of whatever inferences you can draw from the resulting data. Otherwise, this is just like, you know, colorful stories. You might as well create YouTube videos about it.
Right. And I made clear this study is not peer-reviewed. It's just an abstract. It came out at one meeting. I said,
this is the end of the free public preview of the Simpla Vida podcast. For the full podcast, including a transcript and show notes, you can upgrade at simplavida.com.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. Content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. We will not respond to requests for medical advice.